What's happening, everybody? Welcome to the very first episode of Friday Night Rentals. Now, if you guys grew up in the 80s, then you know what the deal is. Friday nights meant hitting the video stores, roaming the aisles, and arguing with your friends and family over which stack of tapes would get you guys through the weekend. It wasn't just about the movies. It was about the ritual, the box art, the over-the-top taglines, the adventure, and yes, even the smell of the plastic VHS cases. In this series, we're dusting off the old shelves to revisit forgotten gems, cult classics, the what were they thinking titles, and everything in between that I think defined an era of home video. I'll cover 10 movies in each episode, movies that I think made the 80s weekends legendary, so grab your membership card, rewind your tapes, and let's dive into 10 rentals from the 1980s that I think deserve another spin, because this is nostalgia, this is VHS gold, this is Friday Night Rentals. In 1987, Canon Films would give us Masters of the Universe, a gloriously weird mix of sword and sorcery and 80s cheese. Dolph Lundgren flexed his way through this one as He-Man, Frank Langella stole the show as Skeletor, and somehow Courtney Cox got caught in the middle of everything. It's part fantasy epic, part fish-out-of-water comedy, and pure VHS spectacle. Now, Masters of the Universe, in theory, was supposed to be the movie that had turned Saturday morning cartoons into big screen magic, and what we actually got was Dolph Lundgren as He-Man wandering around Earth and Frank Langella chewing scenery as Skeletor like it was a five-course meal. And you know what? As a kid grabbing this off the rental shelf, it was pure home video gold. Sure, Eternia looked suspiciously like California, and the special effects ranged from not that bad to was that a flashlight? But none of that mattered on a Friday night with friends, a slice of pizza, a pile of Cheetos, and a cold Mountain Dew in your hand. Looking back, the movie was part of Canon Films' wild gamble to crack into the mainstream, and while it didn't exactly dethrone Star Wars, it did carve out a cult following. Frank Langella has even admitted that he loved playing Skeletor, and it shows he brings Shakespeare-level intensity to a role that could have easily just been a guy cackling in a mask. And for fans, the movie is less about being faithful to the toys and more about just embodying that anything-goes energy of 80s cinema. It may not be high art, but it does have heart, endless camp, and just the kind of earnestness that makes it impossible not to smile at, solidifying itself as a time capsule of the era when toy commercials could become entire blockbusters. Now, since we're on the topic of just 80s movie experiments, we're going to go from cosmic battles to glow-in-the-dark bedroom disasters in John Ritter with this next movie. John Ritter in a sex comedy about midlife crisis. That's Skin Deep, a 1989 Blake Edwards comedy that asked, what if Three's Company dropped the laugh track and went full R-rated with Ritter juggling exes, girlfriends on the side, and endless bedroom hijinks? It's both raunchy, oddly sweet, and very much a time capsule of late 80s adult comedy. By 1989, John Ritter had already earned his place in TV history as the lovable goofball from Three's Company, but here in Skin Deep, he would take things in a much raunchier direction, playing a womanizing novelist whose personal life is as messy as a dorm room VHS collection. For anyone renting this back in the late 80s, it was a little bit jarring to see Ritter trade slapstick for bedroom disasters, but that's also what kind of made it fun. It wasn't just Jack Tripper tripping over a couch. It was Ritter fumbling through midlife crisis, awkward relationships, and yes, the now infamous glow-in-the-dark condom duel, a scene that I think deserves its own place in the Comedic Hall of Fame.
Amazing.
I know I haven't had one that lasted this long since I was 12.
Skin Deep just lived in that space where late 80s comedies would try to balance heartfelt lessons with outrageous gags. Some of it lands, a lot of it feels dated, but Ritter's charm keeps all of it afloat with ease. He manages to just make even the most absurd moment relatable, and that reminds us why he was just such a beloved presence on screen and such a comedic force of nature. For many, this was the rental you didn't admit to watching with the family, but it definitely circulated on Friday nights for anybody in the mood for something a little spicier than, say, Weekend at Bernie's. And looking back, Skin Deep certainly isn't a classic, but it is a time capsule, the kind of movie that just dared to push boundaries while still keeping one foot planted in sitcom territory. It may not be Ritter's defining role, but it's proof that he could carry a film, even one with glow sticks in the wrong places. Now, if Ritter's glow-in-the-dark duel wasn't wild enough for you, wait until you see what happens when Elvira takes over small-town America in this next flick. Cassandra Peterson would take her campy TV horror host persona to the big screen in 1988 with Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Equal parts spooky and silly, it followed Elvira inheriting a creepy mansion in a conservative town, unleashing chaos, cleavage, and a killer casserole. Think Bewitched meets Morticia Adams meets late night TV. Elvira here would burst out of the late night television screen and into small town America with Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Cassandra Peterson brought her full campy, sassy horror host persona to the big screen in this one, trading the gothic glamour of her TV show for a full-length story about inheriting a creepy mansion and accidentally shaking up a conservative small town. For anybody renting this back in the day, it was a delightful mix of horror, comedy, and just the right amount of cleavage-fueled chaos to ignite many young teens' curiosity of the dark side. What makes Elvira so memorable, though, isn't just the jokes or the more than slightly absurd plot. It's really Peterson herself. I mean, she walks that tight line between spooky and ridiculous with total confidence, turning even the most outlandish scenarios into just a performance you can't look away from. The townspeople in this movie, they may be uptight, but the movie itself doesn't take itself seriously at all, which is exactly why it works. You can almost imagine kids on Friday nights back in the day watching this in the dark, whispering, "You think she has the plants?" while secretly not caring either way. Pop culture-wise, Elvira would be cemented as a symbol of 80s camp and Halloween celebration, influencing everything from costumes to late-night horror hosting for years to come. Today, it's not just a movie, it's a bit of a reminder of a time when horror and comedy could just collide in bold, bright, ridiculous, and utterly entertaining ways. And watching it now, it's impossible not to smile at the charm of it all, the sass of it all, and just the sheer audacity that this movie had. And while Elvira did have her worm-filled casserole, several years earlier, Robin Williams was rocking some impressive forearms and feasting on spinach in this next video store gym. Prior to achieving award-winning stardom, Robin Williams strapped on the giant forearms to play the spinach-guzzling sailor in Robert Altman's comedy musical Popeye from 1980. Shelley Duvall is perfect as olive oil, and the movie is as strange and offbeat as the comic strips it's based on. Today it's a musical oddity, a total throwback, and truly unforgettable. Before Robin Williams became the genie, Mrs. Doubtfire, or the inspirational teacher who made us stand on our desks. He was Popeye, giant forearms, squinty eye, corncob pipe and all. This was one of those rentals you grab out of sheer curiosity or just found yourself watching on cable in the middle of the afternoon on a weekend. Was it comedy? Was it a musical? Was it a live action cartoon? And I guess the answer would be yes, yes, and yes, while also being kind of a what the hell did I just watch experience. Williams, in his first leading role, just throws himself into the sailor persona with mumbled lines and plenty of I am what I am, while Shelley Duvall might be the most perfectly cast olive oil imaginable. The songs are quirky, the sets look like they were built from driftwood and spare paint, and the whole thing just feels less like a blockbuster and more like an oddball stage play that somehow wound up on a VHS tape and got circulated.
I said fooey, and I mean fooey. Fooey.
For kids, it was strange but fascinating, the kind of movie you couldn't stop watching even if you weren't sure you liked it or not. And for adults, it's become a cult curiosity, remembered as much for its ambition as it was for its bizarre execution overall. And pop culture wise, Popeye never really hit the heights of other comic strip adaptations, but it showed that Robin Williams was destined for bigger things. And looking back now, it's just a weird, lovable relic of the era, the kind of tape that you found in just the family section and gave it a rental once, if only to see Robin Williams sing about spinach. Now, from cartoon-inspired sailors, we're going to step into ghost cars and Charlie Sheen returning from the dead to haunt the desert highways in this next flick. In 1986, Charlie Sheen starred in a supernatural car revenge movie where a murdered teen comes back as a mysterious driver of a turbocharged Dodge Interceptor. Toss in Sherilyn Finn, a magnificently over-the-top Nick Cassavetes, and backlit desert highways, and you've got one of the wildest ghost car movies the 80s ever produced. Now, if you rented The Wraith in 1986, the chances are you didn't fully know what you were getting into, and that was half the fun. The cover art promised muscle cars, young love, something supernatural, and the movie delivered all of that with a dash of Charlie Sheen for good measure. Story follows a teen who's murdered by a desert gang and comes back from the dead, reincarnated as a mysterious driver behind the wheel of a sleek, otherworldly Dodge Turbo Interceptor. So think Fast and the Furious meets Poltergeist meets summer teen romance. The movie is part revenge thriller, part sci-fi fantasy, part car commercial. Every race feels like it was filmed just for the VHS trailer reel, and honestly, that's what makes it such a good time. Back in the rental days, this was the perfect pick for teens looking for something edgy but not too heavy. Fast cars, revenge, and a supernatural twist that you could talk about at school on Monday. Cassavetes truly got the memo here, and is just his delightful overacting is really a treat. My friends and I absolutely loved this movie growing up.
There's a kid out there using his car to kill people. Not that it's such a big deal, since it seems to be your gang he's got it in for.
And over time, The Wraith has carved out cult status. It's remembered less for its plot coherence and much more for its atmosphere, its vibrantly lit desert highways, its killer soundtrack, and a sense of stylish weirdness that just screams mid-80s cinema. It's not perfect, but like a souped-up car, it didn't have to be. It just had to look cool when it blasted past you, with The Wraith proving that fast cars and revenge could be a perfect recipe for teenage intrigue. This concept, however, wasn't nearly as wild as this next movie, based on the gross-out kids' sticker cars that we all had at least a few of when we were a kid. The world of trading cards were never the same after the Garbage Pail Kids would burst onto the scene like a high school pimple. They were an absolute success. So in 1987, we got the Garbage Pail Kids movie, a childish fever dream featuring rubber-faced puppet abominations trying to fit in with humans. It's part musical, our moral lesson, all nightmare fuel, and the perfect movie for a night with a few friends and a whole lot of drinks. Now, if you grew up with these cards and you traded them with your friends, then you probably thought the Garbage Pail Kids movie would be the ultimate rental. Instead, it turned into the kind of VHS you rented once, then hid in the back of the shelf like a family secret. The story follows a group of deformed, rubber-faced puppets trying to survive in the human world, and while it's pitched as a wacky kid adventure, it mostly plays like childhood nightmare fuel with a theme song and iconically bizarre puppetry. For kids, it was both fascinating and disturbing. The costumes looked like they were built in someone's garage, and the expressions never changed, which made them weirdly terrifying. Adults who rented it probably wondered how it ever got past a pitch meeting, and yet there's something strangely admirable about how unapologetically odd it is. I remember enjoying it as a kid because I was a kid and I loved the Garbage Pail Kids. It didn't take much more than that at 10 or 11 years old. But pop culture-wise, the movie bombed. It certainly came too late in the GPK wave of popularity, but it remains infamous, the kind of movie people think about when listing the strangest adaptations of all time. If nothing else, the Garbage Pail Kids movie proved that not every toy or trading card deserved a movie, but every movie deserved at least one confusing rental back in the day. Now, if you're looking for a movie that's a bit more straightforward and much more grounded, let's reset things with Burt Reynolds playing a Vegas bodyguard with a mustache that can save the day every day and twice on Sundays. Not to be confused with the De Niro vs. Pacino heat, this movie came out in 1986. It stars Burt Reynolds as a Vegas bodyguard who gets in over his head with the mob. It's an action thriller that delivers plenty of Reynolds charm, plenty of mustaches, a few sucker punches. It's a gritty little neo-noir that definitely deserves a second spin around the rental bin. I think this movie delivers Reynolds in all of his iconic glory, mustache intact, and charm set to maximum. Here, Burt plays Nick Escalante, a Las Vegas chaperone who's basically a bodyguard for hire that has a soft spot for damsels in distress and a knack for making bad guys regret their career choices.
No, I like to think of myself as being in the people business.
This movie just has that classic VHS shelf appeal, a grizzled Burt in a leather jacket, a title that promises action, and a tagline that whispered danger. But heat isn't just about the barroom brawls and Burt flexing his cool factor. It's a slower burn, more of a character study than a straight-up action romp, which probably threw off a few weekend renters who just wanted to see car chases and explosions. Instead, you get Burt playing poker, navigating Vegas lowlifes, and unleashing sudden bursts of violence that remind you, oh yeah, this guy was Gator McCluskey after all back in the 70s. Looking back now, it feels like one of those transition films for Reynolds, sitting between his lighthearted comedies and his grittier tough guy roles, and while it didn't set the box office on fire, it became one of those tapes you'd stumble across on the rental shelf and think, why the hell not? Only to spend the weekend feeling like you just discovered a Burt hidden gem, not his most famous outing, but definitely one that I think earns a spot in the nostalgia bin. Now, we're going to step from the tough guys of Vegas over to the summer beaches of Miami for this next flick about a couple of teen troublemakers. Before Johnny Depp was an A-lister, he was just a horny teenager running around private resort in 1985 alongside Rob Marrow. Depp and him scheme their way through a Florida getaway filled with bikini-clad chaos. It's the kind of teen sex comedy that just defined the 80s, complete with slapstick, bad decisions, gratuitous nudity, and questionable fashion. Before Johnny Depp was sailing the high seas as Captain Jack Sparrow, he was chasing girls around a Miami hotel and private resort. This was Depp's first real starring role, and let's just say it wasn't exactly Oscar bait. Teaming up with Rob Marrow, the duo plays buddies, spending a weekend at a luxury resort where the mission is pretty simple: meet women, avoid getting in trouble, and repeat. course, trouble finds them anyway in the form of mistaken identities, a jewel thief played to perfection by Hector Elizondo, and endless slapstick chaos. And that's really all you needed. This movie is pure 1980s teen comedy energy living somewhere between Porky's and Spring Break. It's silly, raunchy, about as subtle as a water balloon to the face, but that's the charm of it all. Back in the rental days, you could almost hear this VHS box whisper to you as you walked by. Parents are out of town? This movie's for you. And while critics didn't exactly roll out the red carpet, I think Private Resort has a goofy charm to it, especially now that it's retroactively funny to see Johnny Depp in such a lightweight romp before he would become Hollywood royalty. It's the kind of movie that wasn't really on heavy rotation on cable TV, which made renting it feel a little bit like you were in on a secret. And for fans of 80s comedies, it's just a reminder that not every single movie needed depth. Sometimes you just needed a goofy weekend escape with a side of neon swimsuits. Now, if you prefer a bit more sophistication with your laughs, then this next movie featuring a great ensemble cast really does dial up the charm, dials up the wit, and it definitely dials up the double crossing. Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Kline, John Cleese, and Michael Palin headline this 1988 British-American heist comedy about jewel thieves double-crossing each other in hilarious ways. A Fish Called Wanda is sharp, witty, and unpredictable, with Kline's Oscar-winning performance proving that stupidity can be genius. When A Fish Called Wanda hit shelves in 1988, it wasn't your typical weekend rental comedy. Sure, it had laughs, but it also had a clever heist plot, a cast stacked with talent, and enough British wit to make you feel a little bit smarter while you were chuckling. Starring John Cleese, Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Kline, and Michael Palin, the movie follows a diamond heist gone sideways with double-crossing, backstabbing, and a whole lot of awkward romance. Jamie Lee Curtis plays the sharp and seductive Wanda. Kevin Kline steals scenes as the dim but dangerously unpredictable Otto, and Cleese delivers one of his best post-Monty Python performances as a guy caught in the chaos. Kline even walked away with an Academy Award for his role, not something you see every day from a VHS comedy rental, but admittedly, this movie was a box office beast, so it was certainly much more than just that. What made A Fish Called Wanda stand out back then and still today is how it balances screwball humor with clever writing. You get slapstick gags, witty dialogue, and moments that just bordered on farce, all while keeping the story tight. And for a Friday night rental, it offered laughs that landed just as well for teens sneaking in a late night watch as it did for parents who claimed they just wanted something light. And over the years, I think it's aged like fine wine. And if you ever wanted proof that comedies could be both smart and hilarious, Wanda is the tape that you'd point at on the shelf. Now, finally, what better way to close out this video than with Anthony Michael Hall ditching his nerd roots and stumbling into LA crime in this last video store classic in this episode? Anthony Michael Hall would take a break from the world of teen comedy to star in a teen thrown into the underworld thriller called Out of Bounds in 1986. After arriving in LA, he gets mixed up with drugs and gangsters and a whole lot of danger. It's a gritty departure for Hall, part crime flick, part fish out of water adventure that certainly gets overlooked. Now, if you wandered into a video store in the late 80s and you saw Out of Bounds on the shelf, you might have thought to yourself, wait, that's Anthony Michael Hall, but it doesn't look like he's playing a nerd. And you'd be right. Fresh off his Breakfast Club fame, Hall took a hard left turn into action thriller territory with this 1986 flick playing a small town farm kid who accidentally stumbles into a Los Angeles drug deal gone horribly wrong when his bag is switched, and the next thing you know, he's on the run, framed for murder, and being hunted by both drug dealers and cops. The movie really is a time capsule of mid-80s LA. You got neon lights, shady nightclubs, and a city that looks just as dangerous as it does cool. It's part chase movie, part fish out of water story, and part attempt to rebrand Hall as something more than just John Hughes's go-to awkward teen. And while the box office didn't exactly buy into the transformation, Out of Bounds found its way into rental racks where curious fans of Hall could see their favorite geek suddenly outrunning bad guys and dodging bullets. And looking back, it's the kind of oddball career move that actually makes perfect sense in the VHS era. It may not have launched Hall into action stardom, but it gave us a gritty little cult movie that's fun to revisit. If nothing else, it's proof that in the 80s, even the nerdiest kid in school could be one bad weekend away from becoming an action hero, and that's why as a teen, I always loved these teen adventure and thriller movies. And that's it for today, guys. That's a wrap on our very first stack of Friday Night Rentals. Hopefully this trip down video lane brought back some memories of sticky carpets and rewinding tapes and arguing over who got to pick the first movie, whether you were rediscovering a classic here, adding a forgotten flick to your watch list, or just enjoyed the ride. That's what this series is all about, celebrating the magic of Friday nights at the video store. And don't forget, this is just the beginning. I've got more 80s gems lined up in the next episode. I also have a few different series that I'm going to be launching at the same time to work in amongst each other to keep it interesting. So be kind, rewind, hit the like button. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a video. And until the next one, movies never say die.
It's Jack Burton and the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
Flag of war. You gotta become war.
I suppose we have to register you as a lethal weapon.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
What's up out there, everybody? Welcome back to Friday Night Rentals, where the popcorn's hot, the neon open signs glowing, and it's always a good time to crack open another stack of VHS gems from the video store era. This week, we've got everything from underdog comedies and oddball sci-fi to buddy cop mayhem and teen adventures and the kind of only in the 80s experiments that made late night rentals legendary. So grab your membership card, get your favorite drink, and get comfortable because we're about to revisit the video store era. In Mr. Mom from 1983, Michael Keaton would ditch the corporate world for chaos in the kitchen after a layoff forces him into stay-at-home dad duty with Terry Garr. Balancing the other side of the household, this comedy turns diapers, laundry, and exploding appliances into his toughest job ever. Now, back in the early 80s, long before the world saw Michael Keaton as Batman or even Beetlejuice, we got him as a frazzled suburban dad in Mr. Mom, and let me tell you, it's really one of his funniest roles. The setup is simple but brilliant. Keaton's Jack Butler loses his job, and suddenly the guy who once lived for corporate meetings and deadlines has to face a completely new battlefield. Laundry piles, vacuum cleaners, and diaper disasters. It's the classic fish-out-of-water comedy, and Keaton nails it with his mix of charm and manic energy. But to me, what makes Mr. Mom so endearing is how it flips gender roles of the times and really uses it to generate some genuine humor, and not just as a gimmick. Because in 1983, the idea of a dad staying at home with the kids was almost radical, and the movie leans into it perfectly with plenty of slapstick humor, but also plenty of heart. Pairing Keaton and Terry Garr as his hardworking wife is just really able to keep the whole thing grounded. Plus, who could forget moments like the washing machine flooding the house or Jack trying to navigate the supermarket with a cart full of chaos?
Oh, I think these are on special.
Doesn't matter. Sorry.
Let me check. Are these Kotex maxi pads on special?
Never mind, Derek. Sorry.
It wasn't just a box office success. Mr. Mom became one of those VHS staples that just lived in every family's movie cabinet. It may not be a flashy cult film, but it's just comfort food for anyone who remembers when comedies could be silly, sweet, and just relatable enough to hit home without needing much more of that. My older family members loved this movie when I was a kid, and I actually enjoyed watching it with them. Now, if Michael Keaton could juggle chaos at home, Goldie Hawn would prove that she could handle chaos on the gridiron just as well in this next rental classic. ...1986's Wildcats gives us Goldie Hawn as a football coach, determined to prove that she can lead the rowdiest team in town to victory with a young Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson suiting up. This scrappy sports comedy is all fumbles, laughs, with a little bit of Friday Night Lights. Now, if you want a quintessential underdog sports comedy, Wildcats is where you go. Goldie Hawn takes the whistle in this one, playing a determined coach who shocks everyone by taking charge of an inner-city high school football team. It's clearly not the most original setup. You've got the misfit players, the grumpy administrators, and the rivalries, but Goldie Hawn energy is what makes this movie. She's just plucky, she's charming, she's tough and funny, all in equal measure, and really she sells the idea that she could whip this ragtag crew of players into shape. But where the movie gets really fun is it was also the film debut for both Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson, and really seeing them side by side in their very early days before White Men Can't Jump or all the later fame they would achieve really does deliver a fun nostalgia blast that's worth alone watching this movie. The football scenes, they are scrappy and energetic, and the comedy really is able to keep the pace moving, even if some of the 80s cliches are definitely baked right in. Wildcats didn't exactly break box office records, but it did become one of those Friday night cable or rental staples. It really fits right in with the era's love of sports comedies where the real victories always happen off the field. It's scruffy, it's funny, and by the end you'll probably be humming that "It's the Sport of Kings, Better Than Diamond Rings" rap, whether you want to or not. Now, let's go from the football field to the computer lab for this next movie where love gets tangled in wires, keyboards, and an awkward AI crush. Before smartphones ruled our lives, there was Electric Dreams from 1984, a quirky little romance comedy about a man, his computer, and the girl next door. Starring Lenny Von Dolan and Virginia Madsen, it's a love triangle where the third wheel just so happens to be a jealous PC named Edgar. Now, there are only in the 80s movies, and then there's Electric Dreams. It's a movie that asks, what if your computer fell in love with your girlfriend? It stars Lenny Von Dolan as a shy architect and Virginia Madsen as the cellist next door and a jealous computer named Edgar. It's a love triangle that's really straight out of the digital dark ages, long before smartphones could nag us or Alexa could snoop on us. Electric Dreams was an early warning that technology might get a little bit too attached.
Oh, listen, I don't know anything about computers.
Nobody does, but don't you want one for when you do find out?
The film mixes romance, comedy, and a heavy dose of synth pop into something uniquely charming. Yes, the premise is bonkers, but that's the appeal. This was the 80s where music montages could really solve anything and machines had more personality than most sitcom characters. Virginia Madsen glows, Von Dolan is perfectly awkward, and Edgar the computer somehow steals the show, making you almost sympathize with his heartbreak. Almost. But what really makes Electric Dreams stand out is just its vibe overall. The nostalgic visuals, the electronic soundtrack, just all blended with the goofy charm and the techno paranoia just make this movie a true time capsule. It certainly did not become a mainstream hit, but it does have a devoted cult following, and watching it now kind of feels like you're stepping into a dream of what someone in the 80s thought the future might look like. But if you think A Computer in Love was strange, wait until you meet a wisecracking robot who just wants to stay alive in this next rental gem. In Short Circuit from 1986, Ally Sheedy and Steve Guttenberg would team up with Johnny Five, a wisecracking robot who escapes the military after discovering he's alive. With lasers, laughs, and a heart bigger than its R drive, this would become peak 80s family fun. If there was ever an 80s movie that proved robots could be funny, adorable, and weirdly relatable, it has to be Short Circuit, a movie that took the E.T. template and just ran in its own direction with it. Stars Ally Sheedy, Steve Guttenberg, and Fisher Stevens in some very questionable casting choices for 21st century standards at least, but the real star here is hands down Johnny Five, a military robot who gets zapped with lightning and suddenly becomes sentient. With wide-eyed wonder and a knack for wisecracks, he escapes his creators and, of course, sets off to discover life, love, and maybe some robot booty, as well as a whole lot of input in a little fun robot coming-of-age story. The movie was pure VHS gold. Johnny Five wasn't just a special effect. He was a full-on character packed with heart and humor and charm. The scenes of him reading through piles of books or mimicking TV shows or joyfully dancing around are still just ridiculously charming. And then, of course, there's the military trying to shut him down, adding just enough chase and tension to keep things moving between all the laughs. What's really wild, though, is how much of a pop culture footprint Johnny Five would leave. Kids adored him, including myself. Catchphrases like "Number Five is alive" became playground staples, and the film's mix of sentiment and slapstick would cement it as one of the decade's family favorites. And watching it today, it's still hard not to root for this quirky little robot that just wanted to live and laugh and maybe fire a few lasers for good measure. Now, speaking of unlikely duos, next up is a movie that pairs an uptight fed with a rule-breaking cop. It's a buddy action flick that's pretty much been forgotten over time. The Wild Pair from 1987 would throw Beau Bridges and Bubba Smith together as an oddball couple who team up to chase down some drug dealers. It's an action comedy packed with shootouts and car chases and plenty of cop banter. It's pretty much Lethal Weapon if you grabbed it off the shelf, maybe a few rows lower. If the 80s taught us anything, it's that every oddball duo deserved at least one buddy cop movie, and The Wild Pair is Exhibit A, starring Beau Bridges as an FBI agent and Bubba Smith as a tough narcotics cop. This one throws the two together to, of course, take down some drug lords as well as clash every step of the way. This one has Bridges bringing the straight man energy with charm, while Smith oozes that cool, tough guy charisma that only he can deliver by bringing plenty of intimidation, but also that same lovable charm he brought to the Police Academy movies. Now, is it groundbreaking? Far from it, but that's kind of part of the charm. It's like finding a forgotten gem in the video store action section. I remember stumbling onto this movie on cable as a kid, excited to see Hightower as a full-fledged cop. The shootouts are loud, the car chases are messy, and the dialogue lands somewhere between serious thriller and accidental comedy. So naturally, The Wild Pair never broke it big in theaters, but it became a cult rental for people who'd already seen Lethal Weapon like 10 times and wanted something new for a Friday night. It's scrappy and rough around the edges, and really the exact type of movie you'd pick up because the cover promised more explosions and action than the budget could actually deliver. And really, that's kind of the essence of the 80s buddy cop craze. It didn't need polish, just mismatched partners, a pile of bullets, and a VCR, sort of like this next rental classic that goes from mismatched cops to mismatched kids and a pint-sized buddy adventure full of big city danger. And really endless 80s charm. In Big Shots from 1987, a suburban kid teams up with a street-smart hustler after tragedy strikes, leading them into a wild Chicago-set adventure starring Ricky Busker and Darius McCrary. It's part Stand By Me, part 48 Hours, and a buddy comedy drama that has action, heart, and plenty of 80s attitude. You know, Big Shots is really just one of those 80s movies that feels like someone threw a coming-of-age story and an action comedy into a blender. It follows a suburban kid played by Ricky Busker who runs away after losing his father, and he ends up teaming with a streetwise Chicago kid named Scam played by Darius McCrary, and together they stumble into gangsters, into some car chases, and a whole lot of danger, all while having a little fun and learning about friendship and growing up along the way. So textbook 80s teen cinema. The charm of Big Shots is really found in that odd mix of tones. One minute it's heavy with loss and heart, the next minute it's zany and silly with kids outsmarting crooks, while still delivering that dash of after-school special. McCrary, who would later become famous on Family Matters, I think steals the show as the savvy street kid, while Busker plays comparable to him as the wide-eyed contrast perfectly. Naturally, critics didn't know what to make of it, and it was quickly dismissed, but on VHS and cable, it did have a second life. It's the kind of movie kids rented because the cover looked cool, and parents rented because it seemed family-friendly enough, only to realize it had more grit than they expected. And looking back now, I think Big Shots is another one of those 80s time capsules. It's funny, awkward, heartfelt, and a little rough, all of which makes it memorable. But if you thought City Kids had it tough, just wait until you see what happens when an alien crash lands in suburbia in this next movie. Mac and Me from 1988 tells the story of a wheelchair-bound boy who befriends a lost alien, but really, let's be honest, it's pretty much remembered as the infamous E.T. knockoff that turned itself into one giant Coke and McDonald's commercial, stitched together from a collection of recycled tropes and cliches, and you know what? It's still pretty awesome. Ah, Mac and Me, the movie that boldly asked, what if E.T. was made with way less money and way less subtlety, way more product placement, with a kid in a wheelchair? Story follows a young, of course, wheelchair-bound boy who befriends a stranded alien named Mac, which, not so coincidentally, stands for Mysterious Alien Creature, and together, they dodge government agents and try to reunite Mac with his family. It's heartwarming, right? Well, kind of. That was really the intention, of course. Sadly, what people really remember isn't the story, it's the shameless corporate tie-ins. This movie doesn't just feature Coke and McDonald's, it pretty much worships them. The infamous fast food dance party where Ronald McDonald himself shows up might be one of the most gloriously bizarre sequences in all of cinema. It's so over the top that it's just really crossed itself into cult status, with fans appreciating it for its unintentional comedy.
Communing with the earth spirits.
Welcome to California, bud.
But here's the thing. Kids in the 80s still loved it. I know I did. I made my aunt drive me and my friend to the theater to see this movie. The alien design is weirdly endearing. The friendship moments do tug at the heart a little, and it delivered just enough of that E.T. magic knockoff to kind of earn a spot on the rental shelf. And today, I think Mac and Me has a second life as a guilty pleasure, the kind of movie you throw on for laughs and nostalgia rather than a deep or even interesting story. And really, that's kind of its true legacy. It's one of the strangest, most entertaining bad movies to ever hit VHS. Now, from suburban strangeness, we're going to urban grit. Our next stop is taking us to the rooftops, where breakdancing is survival. That's right, survival. From the director of West Side Story comes part one of our Jason Gedrick double feature tonight with Rooftops from 1989, a drama set in New York where kids dance, fight, and combat their way through survival. It's half urban musical, half street thriller. It's pure 80s cheese whiz with a perfect view from the fire escape. Now, Rooftops is just one of those movies that could only exist at the tail end of the 80s. It's a gritty teen drama that follows a group of homeless New York City kids who live on the rooftops, battle hardships, and fight in bizarre dance combat matches. That's right, you heard that correctly, street fighting as interpretive dance, only in the 80s and almost only from director Robert Wise. The plot follows 80s heartthrob Jason Gedrick as a street kid named T, caught between living on the city streets and, of course, dreaming of something bigger, and along the way, there are rival gangs, young love, and plenty of rooftop brooding. But really what makes it memorable isn't just the melodrama, which there is a surplus of, it's really just the surreal blend of styles. It's half urban musical, half crime drama, half teen coming-of-age story with dialogue that veers between heartfelt and unintentionally hilarious. Now, at the time, it didn't exactly light up the box office, but man, my friends' sisters or any female friends seemed like they were always watching this movie when it was on, and I'll admit it, as bad as it was, I enjoyed it, and like a lot of these movies, it found its audience on VHS with teens who were craving something edgier than a John Hughes movie, and watching it now, Rooftops is just a nostalgia-soaked time capsule of late 80s urban storytelling. It's earnest and strange, and really way more entertaining than it probably should be, but if you're looking for a peak video store, what did I just rent energy, this movie is it. Now, while rooftop warriors fight in dance battles in this one, another hero who looks oddly familiar to the guy in this movie was ready to take flight literally by stealing a fighter jet in our next rental pick. ...1986's Top Gun alternative Iron Eagle gives us Jason Gedrick again, this time as a teen who steals a fighter jet with the help of Louis Gossett Jr. to rescue his dad from enemy territory. It's loud and backed by a full rock soundtrack that makes it Top Gun's VHS cousin. Just a few months before Top Gun would dominate the skies and the box offices, Iron Eagle gave us the ultimate teenage wish fulfillment fantasy, Jason Gedrick as a kid who straight up steals a fighter jet to rescue his father from enemy territory. How does he do it off? With a little help from 80s cinema, Louis Gossett Jr., a killer mixtape, and 80s movie logic that doesn't sweat the details. All jokes aside though, what makes Iron Eagle so memorable is just its underdog energy. It doesn't have the sleek polish of Top Gun, but it makes up for it with heart and melodrama and rock anthems blasting out of the cockpit and Gossett Jr. absolutely grounding the film with his commanding presence. For teens of the era, it was pure empowerment. If the adults won't save your dad, just grab some aviator glasses, fire up the jet, and get the job done yourself. The movie may not have been a critical darling, but it was a routine rental for me and my friends, and we would always watch it when it was on afternoon cables, which it seemed to be always playing on, and it would earn enough love from VHS rentals to spawn three more sequels, with each one more wilder and more low budget than the last. And today, Iron Eagle is just a cult classic of 80s action, remembered less for the realism and much more for its attitude. It's cheesy, it's over the top, and totally sincere about it, which is exactly why it works. And finally, from sky-high dogfights, we land in a spy game gone wrong where campus hijinks meet Cold War intrigue. In 1985's Gotcha, Anthony Edwards would star as a college kid whose paintball hobby accidentally turns into real-life espionage. One minute he's winning campus games and fighting for the love of the ladies, the next he's dodging spies and bullets in Europe with Linda Fiorentino alongside him. Now, if you ever wanted proof that the 80s could turn pretty much any concept into a spy thriller, Look no further than Gotcha. Anthony Edwards plays Jonathan. He's a college kid that's obsessed with this campus paintball game called Gotcha, and what starts as harmless fun naturally turns into international espionage when he gets tangled up with spies, femme fatales, and government missions in Europe. And that's really the fun of Gotcha and how quickly it can shift gears. One minute Edwards is bumbling through dates and college hijinks, the next he's dodging bullets in East Berlin. The tonal whiplashes, I think, really are part of the appeal, though. It's tense, it's goofy, and romantic all at once. Linda Fiorentino adds plenty of femme fatale flair, and Edwards plays the reluctant spy role with just enough of a mix of charm and panic. It didn't make huge waves in theaters, but like many on this list, it found a good life on VHS, and for kids who rented it, Gotcha felt like that grown-up adventure movie with just enough comedy to keep it accessible, and today it's a fun nostalgia blast of just Cold War espionage paranoia mashed up with teen comedy energy, and honestly, it's worth a rewatch just for the wild idea that campus paintball could somehow prep you for actual espionage. And that wraps up another episode of Friday Night Rentals. We've laughed at the comedies, marveled at the strange experiments, and maybe even rediscovered a few forgotten treasures hiding on the back of the shelves. Now it's your guys' turn. Let me know which of tonight's picks you remember renting back in the day. If you have some other movies that you just have nostalgic memories of pulling from the VHS shelves at the video store, let me know down in the comments. If you've been enjoying this trip through the golden age of the VHS vaults, hit the like button, subscribe, ring the notification bell so you never miss a video. Thank you guys all so much for watching. I truly do appreciate all your viewership and all your comments. It really means the world to me. I will see you guys back in the next video coming real soon. And until then, movies never say die.
This is Jack Burton in the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
Flag of war. You gotta become war.
I suppose we have to register you as a lethal weapon.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?